Welcome back to episode 230. Joe, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Tim. And I hope you caught the New Year's television celebration that was hosted by the two gay gentlemen.
Yeah, they shared a kiss. Lucky it was just a peck on the lips. Wasn't a, you know, a gaping romance.
I didn't see it, but I was sent videos of. So a few listeners have they've been trying to help us spice the show up and like reverse the negative trend of ratings of powers and principalities, you know. And so they were saying, well, you guys should have a gay couple like once a month replace you.
Okay, they can like.
What do you think? Instead of Tim and Joe, would be like Faye and Gay or something, you know, and they can
bicker.
This would help. No, I'm serious. This is like I'm getting suggestions like this to try to broaden the perspective of, you know, but I don't know. We'll have to think about that one.
Well, I think mainstream media and network television and entertainment is pushing the gay thing so hard that I don't think we don't have to pick up
that slack. You know, I'm glad you brought that up. I was going to mention, you know, the mainstream media is collapsing. We've talked about this for mm-hmm. 4 years or something, but man, oh man, it is really happening. And it's just when they need it the most for the propaganda control. Mm-hmm. And CNN has actually had a couple nights where they dipped under 600,000. I mean, this isn't even a viable podcast number at this point. And this is, you know, it just shows that we will stand on top of their graves, Tim, because they lie their heads off and we just try to tell the truth. And ultimately, you know, the human mind and soul relates to truth, I think, more directly than to propaganda.
Yeah, I think Dennis the Menace reruns are getting higher ratings than CNN's shows. So
everything is.
So, okay, well, this week, some events. Ghislaine Maxwell was convicted of recruiting teenage girls for Epstein sex abuse. Let's see, Maxwell was found guilty by a U.S. jury on Wednesday of helping the late financier Jeffrey Epstein sexually abuse teenage girls, sealing a remarkable fall from grace for the British socialite. She's a British socialite. That's what she's identified as. Maxwell, 60, was accused of recruiting and grooming four teenagers between 1994 and 2004 for Epstein, her former boyfriend, who, of course, allegedly killed himself. And that's how it's reported where the news report says killed himself. Who killed himself in 2019? I don't think anyone believes that. Nevertheless, they print it. He allegedly killed himself in a Manhattan jail cell while awaiting trial on sex abuse charges of his own. She was convicted on 5 or 6 counts, including one count of sex trafficking. Lawyers for Maxwell, who faces up to 65 years in prison, plans to appeal. Maxwell's trial was widely seen as a reckoning for Epstein, had in one of the highest profile cases in the wake of the hashtag MeToo movement. So that's what it is. It's a MeToo movement thing, which encouraged women to speak out about sexual abuse by famous and powerful people of no particular ethnic persuasion or background. And I just added that. during the month-long trial, jurors heard emotional, explicit testimony from four women who portrayed Maxwell as central to their abuse by Epstein. Three of the four said Maxwell herself touched their bare breast or took part in encounters, which often began as massages. The jury deliberated for 5 full days before reaching the verdict. Annie Farmer, one of the women who testified against Maxwell, said, "I am so relieved and grateful that the jury recognized the pattern of predatory behavior that Maxwell engaged in for years and found her guilty of these crimes." Maxwell's lawyer, Bob Sternheim, told reporters that the defense was disappointed with the verdict. "We've already started working on the appeal, and we are confident that she will be vindicated. Sternheim said outside of the courthouse. She's now a convicted sex offender. It's a lot of speculation whether or not will Maxwell now spill the beans on those in power who exploited the young girls. I don't think there's any chance of that.
I just interject him. She won't.
No, I don't think so. The trial scope was very limited. It doesn't bring into question the blackmail operation and the high profile people, the celebrities, the politicians and public officials and such who were apparently entrapped in Jeffrey Epstein's blackmail operation. There's Maxwell's background. She comes from a family, which is a spying family. And of course, Robert Maxwell was the media baron who himself allegedly committed suicide back in 1991. He worked for the Mossad. And you know, if you read Whitney Webb's articles about the Maxwells, particularly a recent one regarding, I think titled Daddy's Little Girl, about Ghislaine Maxwell, you know how her father's media empire was often utilized by the Mossad. He apparently raided the pension fund to fund intelligence operations. And when he went bankrupt, the Mossad wouldn't bail him out. Some people speculate that is when he was murdered and then given a state funeral as compensation, I guess. But again, the wider issues aren't going to be addressed, right? And then we'll talk about the sexual blackmail and compromising or compromise strategies that these intelligence agencies, particularly the Israel's, use to undermine government. I mean, to co-opt and get control of entire governments, right? I mean,
I look at it like this: they put these theatrical productions on to create the impression that there is an existing legal system that will from time to time, corral powerful, corrupt, and evil people. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of like, creating an intense dialectic in a presidential campaign between two members from the Skull and Bones. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are just ways to distract. And a clue that it would actually not just be a theatrical distraction would be if they actually produced hard evidence against someone who you knew would be on the inside, like Clinton or Justice Roberts. I mean, if stuff like that came out, then you could wake up from, the somnambulant position of ho-hum, another theatrical production, and then think something real might happen. The judge sealed all of the transcripts for like 75 years or something. So that's not going to come out. This is in the same category of, Biden's laptop, Hillary's laptop, Comet Pizza. I mean, these things pop up and they are tantalizing. They distract and then they just disappear down the rabbit hole or there's no traction with the public and right now it's we have real issues in terms of trying to keep the unvaccinated organized and organizing and protected, and so we don't want to waste time with this kind of stuff. I mean, she's just as anyone can see, she's just an absolute monster of a human, but I just see no advantage that can be made out of the trial and her conviction. I mean, given that no powerful individual was given as a way for the public to see evil in action. See what I mean? I mean, you needed to see some evidence and some names of real individuals. Otherwise, it's just something that it's like a TV show.
Well, I mean, what the Epstein operation was, Epstein's benefactor was Les Wexner, who was owned the Limited, this billionaire based out of Columbus, Ohio. And he's part of the Mega Group, which is this group of Jewish billionaires who operate on behalf or with the Israeli government. And they're engaged in all types of illegal activity, allegedly, a lot of evidence for. And so you could open up a can of worms about this. And again, the if you're wondering why maybe 190 nations, you know, fell on the line so easily with the lockdown, well, compromise might be a part of it. It's part of a net, part of a control strategy that that the oligarchs,
absolutely,
this criminal syndicate has. Yeah, so
but the problem is that no evidence, no real evidence was either presented in the trial, or if it had been, was then released to the public.
Yeah, I mean, we've had similar, I guess, revelations or limited hangouts in the past. You had, you know, the Franklin scandal. There was a trial there for Lawrence King, who ran the Franklin Savings Loan, which I think he went away for embezzlement. But literally, he was a procurer for sexual slaves for the political elite back in the 80s. And there was a BBC special, I think it was produced, no, not BBC, it was produced by, that was going to air, that was pulled off at the last minute. In fact, it was so much at the last minute that TV Guide had it listed as airing, but it was pulled out at the last minute, detailing the scandal. And this was basically a sex trafficking ring went out of, you know, Omaha, Nebraska, involving Boys Town. So it really exposed a lot. And you have, of course, you've had, more recently, Comet Ping Pong Pizza thing that broke a few years ago, and that has ties to the Clinton Foundation and also to the George Soros's foundations.
Yeah, but Tim, think about it. When was the last time anyone who was really in the club, demonstrably in the club, someone like, you know, Clinton or you know, Biden or something, you know, some, I mean, these are presidents, but I mean, just go down a few tranches and you know what I'm talking about. When was the last time anyone like that was put in prison?
Well, they're not.
I mean, they disappeared like Epstein, but obviously he wasn't, you know.
I think that their political island, their political ascendancy was a function of their compromise. That's just how, like, a philanderer like Clinton from Arkansas, who cooperated with the criminal syndicate in the 80s with out of Mena, Arkansas, and the drug of the cocaine being shipped in, was rewarded and set up, but they want someone who's compromised. Good example, Denny Hastert, Speaker of the House, was caught for these things, but he didn't become Speaker despite it. He became Speaker because of it. So this is all part of this kakistocracy that is installed. One method by which it's installed is an operation like Jeffrey Epstein's. It's Brownstone operation. And it's much more common. You know, you have the Dutroux affair, which most Americans don't know about in Belgium, which highlighted sort of this trafficking operation in Belgium, where NATO, Brussels, where NATO is headquartered. So there's that. I mean, so these things leak out and you start to connect the dots, get an idea of what's going on here. That also, there's a prominent Israeli operation going on there. So you have that pattern. Again, you're right. I mean, obviously what it's the, you know, we look at the dog that didn't bark in this case, you know, and what they didn't talk, they sealed the records for 75 years. I think the judge was a co-ethnic of Maxwell's. And again, we're not as good Americans. We're supposed to believe in the civic myth that these things don't matter. These primal ties or ethnic identity doesn't matter. There's no such thing as ethnic nepotism or networking. There is, but common white folk can't engage in such things because we really have no identity anymore. But other groups do have this, and it plays a significant factor in how politics and how power is distributed throughout the world, how it's exercised. But again, we can't look at that because it's just not polite to draw on the questions, draw those questions or ask those questions. And when there's obviously a limited hangout or cover up, not supposed to think anything of it, right?
So this is my take on the whole thing with, you know, Maxwell, is that it's just, you know, it's interesting. And if we could ever penetrate that veil, right? And I mean, to actually get video and audio tapes and the, you know, the eyewitness testimony that was under oath, and then give this to the public in a way that would shatter the mythology that the public has about the political class, that it isn't a secret society, that it's not against them, that it's not against the people, this would be incredibly valuable. I'd be all in favor of that and would just do everything I could to help bring the information forward. But there's always this glass part, this glass wall, you know, you can't get through it. You can see it. You can see Biden's laptop. You know, if we could just get our hands on it, there'd just be, you know, all sorts of incriminating information. We can never get there. So we were just once again, you know, fooled by this theatrical process that they roll out time and time again to keep us believing that in the future, you know, perhaps justice will, you know, deliver something, you know, the justice system in the United States will deliver something to the public, but it never will. And I think that the next kind of moment that we're going to experience that's really going to be negative is when the Supreme Court takes up the vaccine mandate appeals on January the 5th. I think this will lead to a great disappointment. You know, some people are actually believing that the Supreme Court will hold up the lower courts, you know, striking down the mandates. But I think this is really far-fetched. And so, you know, this is going to be a very, very difficult year. Very difficult year for the unvaccinated. And so, you know, want to organize our minds in the right way and, you know, just try to ignore distractions and get more focused on survival, you know, that, you know, which will be a challenge, I'm afraid.
Well, the Supreme Court has agreed to take up two vaccine mandate cases. The one involving OSHA and the one for healthcare workers. A third mandate, I think, is one for federal contractors, is also under consideration, but it's in, I think, in some sort of limbo because the other two cases, and it will probably, depending, go whichever the other two court cases go. So
I'll probably wrap them into one case, actually.
Yeah. Now I don't know. Now, obviously, you can't predict. You can't look at the law because it could be a political decision, like the Obamacare decision was. Or they could turn it, you know, they could actually overturn it the way that the appeals courts have done. I think two of three or four have. I don't know. I said, you don't know how these things are going to turn out. You obviously can't, again, you can't look at the law and go, oh, that's how it's going to work out. They've tried to cite a couple precedents. One is the Jacobson v. Massachusetts ruling in 1905, which didn't enforce the vaccine and enforced the fine for not taking a vaccine. But nevertheless, even the Jacobson decision, just because it's a decision back in 1905, they say, well, that stands. Well, does Buck versus Bell stand for sterilization? That was the same court that gave us Buck versus Bell. You know, the one that said there are two generations of imbeciles is enough and they justified forced sterilization. So, you know, why follow that error? Also, the difference is the Jacobson decision was dealing with a particular piece of legislation that was duly passed by a state legislature, whereas these mandates are executive orders or administrative decisions. So that's a completely different, creature, if you will. So it's a distinction. Now, who knows? I mean, because again, if there's just sort of kind of ram it through the hell with the law, they've done that a lot the past couple of years.
What do you think is going to happen when they take up the vax mandate? Do you think that there's actually a chance that Supreme Court will,
I don't know. What do they have anything on Robertson to just, in the Epstein file, go back to that, right? Because that's how these decisions are made.
You're right. I hadn't thought of it. God, it's all tied together, right? It just depends on whether or not what Gisela got out of them. I mean, because they have John Roberts on the flight list, you know, going down to Epstein's Island. So of course, you know, someone that you would expect would be able, they would be able to influence. So, okay, so I guess the vaccine mandates are going to be upheld.
So there's that. Now, tomorrow or today, actually, I think the PCR test is being decommissioned by the CDC. As of January 1st, CDC, in a request to the FDA, withdraws its endorsement of the RT-PCR test. CDC acknowledges that the PCR test does not effectively differentiate between COVID-19 and the seasonal influenza. Interesting, because the whole pandemic is based on the PCR test, right? The results?
Yep.
The case-demic, if you will. So while the CDC does not officially acknowledge that the RT-PCR test is invalid, nonetheless calls it to be withdrawn. It's worth noting that a year ago, in January 2021, the World Health Organization also questioned the validity of the PCR test, which had itself put forth at the very outset of the COVID crisis. So if the PCR test is invalid, as suggested by the CDC, its statement, was it 250 million or 260 million so-called confirmed cases of COVID-19 are meaningless. So there's no pandemic, right? So the whole thing should be called off. Oh, no, that's not how it works.
the NFL really decided to end the epidemic inside their ranks. I don't know if you caught this, but they've had all of these problems where their athletes will test positive, mm-hmm. and then they have to quarantine them and they can't play. And they've actually had to cancel a couple of games because so many of the players. All right,
they're not sick; they're just tested positive.
Well, with this, we know how to fix it. We're only going to accept as positive in official league sanctions PCR tests that show positive that are run under 30 cycles.
Okay, so they're auditing the cycle number.
Right, so they understood what it all meant, and they said, okay, we'll just get rid of it. Now, I haven't been able to confirm this, but I did catch one blog genius who claimed that had information, which was that like they've already tested over 100 players and nobody has COVID now.
When they run out of 30.
They were like, you know, they half a dozen every 100 would have it. So anyway, but regardless, this will, of course, end the pandemic in the NFL, as everyone knows that you can just tell by the fact that so many of the people that have been designated as COVID victims have no symptoms.
Now, the vaccines that they're taking, you think they're taking the placebo?
Yeah, that's right. Well,
unlike the soccer players in Europe.
Yeah, those poor devils dropping like flies. Yeah, the vaccine needs to be avoided, in my opinion. This last couple weeks, there have been quite a few science papers that have come out. If you want to see them as a collection, and some of them are older, but there have been quite a few brand new ones, go to Guillaume Biologic, the guy that I've been basically studying the immune system with for the last couple of months, J.J. Cooey. His show, the latest show, he was rolling out all the science papers showing how the immune system is permanently damaged, how antibody-dependent enhancement is definitely onsetting. And this was all backed up by, I don't know if you saw the German, the Robert Koch Institute data, but they had a whole tranche of Germans who were positive with COVID. And I don't know the veracity of the test, but I know that the results were spectacular in that the double dosed vaccinated and the boosted were more than 10 times as likely. Now that is not a misquote. This is the actual data. They were at 10 times as likely as the unvaxxed to contract the dreaded Omicron. Now, whatever you make of the illness that these people will, you know, get as a result of the infection, okay, who knows? But the extreme difference between vaccinated and unvaccinated in terms of the capacity to be infected, man, you can't explain that in any other way other than the immune system has been damaged. Mm-hmm. And this data is spectacular, and it is really giving a very clear signal that, the vaccinated going forward are just going to face, I think, a nightmare. And I also feel that every time they're boosted, their immune system, of course, will be damaged. Mm-hmm. Moreover, they will probably also be damaged by every time they're infected. So in other words, they will, the first time they catch Omicron, I think that they might not have any symptoms. The problem is if their immune system is really onsetting antibody dependent enhancement, the next time they will have a worse, not a better. See how upside down mm-hmm. the immune system is. for the unvaccinated, every time, subsequent time you're infected, it's less deadly because your immune system is already, you know, has an adaptive response to the thing that's accurate. And it can change if there are slight changes in the variations of the virus. But in any case, the vaccinated, their immune system is frozen in place. And every time they're infected, it gets worse. So this is, it could be the winter of all of the fatalities that the White House has been talking about. But it isn't going to be for the unvaccinated. I'm afraid it's just the opposite of what they were claiming. I've said this a number of times that in the past that it seems likely that you're going to start really getting some profound illness. Immune systems that really can't adjust to wild viruses. And won't just be coronavirus. I mean, it's going to be...
Well, there's other things out there, right?
Yeah, they're going to have a hard time with the common cold.
There's all types of things you run that your adaptive immune system is designed to deal with. And then if you destroy
this is really, the rubber meeting the road. And it's fascinating that this data is coming out in Germany. The Caution Institute is using German data. This is at the same time that they're mandating vaccination. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. It shows you that we're really into, beyond the clown world, and we're into the insanity of genocide, wherein even though the data is absolutely concrete that the vaccination is going to make you sicker and kill you, this is still going to be mandated. In Germany, they have... according to the government statistics, there's about 30% that are unvaccinated. I think it's probably around 40%. This is what I've been told. We are going to have an interesting 60, 90 days here in Germany and Austria, because remember, they're mandating it February the 1st, and they're levying fines against people who refuse to be vaccinated that are too large for a normal person to accept. People are leaving Germany. People are trying to get out right now. Sukrit Bhakti, the physician who is anti-vax, he has a video that is out, and he says he's very emotional. He says he's getting out of Germany because he doesn't want his children to be forced to be vaccinated. So this is what we're going to be experiencing here pretty quick. I think it'll be everywhere. The incrementalism they'll onset it, in the most controlled areas, Australia, New Zealand, and evidently they're trying in Germany, which is surprising, isn't it, that they're going to try it to be so draconian there because there's real resistance. But it is going to be where the battle is first waged. You got 30%, 40% of the population. Germany's got what? Is it like 90 million people, something like that? I mean, you're talking about tens of millions of people. How are they going to control them? And if at the same time the vaccinated start getting sick, well, what else can there be, Tim, other than just civil war? I mean, it's just going to be just hand-to-hand fighting.
They will claim that it's the unvaccinated making the vaccinated sick.
Yep,
that's exactly even though right. Even though that makes no sense, because if it
makes
works,
absolutely no sense. but that's what they will claim.
Yeah. People who are vaccinated getting sick at a much higher rate because their immune system has been depleted.
Yeah, just a question. Are you having trouble being around people that are vaccinated?
I don't know. I haven't noticed anything because most I run into people in terms of work, and not really. They just mention that they're vaccinated as if they're putting me at ease. And I say, that's fine. I move on.
Yeah.
Good for you.
For a long time, I didn't have any trouble with it. But for some reason, in the last month, I've turned and I just have a very hard time. If someone wants to talk about how happy they are that they've taken a booster, I just somehow am not able to be quiet any longer. And I lash into them. And you know,
that's a different, that's a different conversation, because then you're forced.
Yeah, it's a totally different conversation. Yeah, and, yeah. And, you know, it's a bizarre conversation, because bear in mind, if you win and you convince this individual that you haven't made their day, have you?
No.
So you are going to suffer. I mean, it's just, it's an insane situation.
Yeah. And then they're telling people that, you know, getting, you still have to put a mask on, a stupid mask on. It doesn't work. You know, it's what benefit, you know, I live in an area where, yeah, there's, it's not really enforced. The shops still say wear a mask if you come in, but it's not enforced. And it's essentially, if you want to do it, and roughly depends where you are in the area. It's, you know, it can be 70-30 wearing a mask. It can be 80-20 not wearing a mask. If you go further out, people tend to be less compliant or less obsessed with it. The closer you get in to the metropolitan area, the rate of compliance and paranoia or fear goes up. It's an odd, it's a funny thing to observe. It's the
That's fascinating. Yeah. The paranoia gets noticeably deeper as the closer you get to the heart of darkness in the middle of the city.
It's like, you know, why are smart people stupid, right? It's it's like the paradox. Because they're in, I imagine, because they're more in a corporate or governmental setting. And so they're just kind of wired that way, you know, whereas if you get further out, you're not enslaved to a particular system or bureaucracy. So but they have a way to fight this. Apparently, forging a vaccine card is now a federal offense. The U.S. government has found a new way to turn regular citizens into criminals. forging a vaccination card is now a federal offense that could carry a lengthy prison sentence. The government is ready to pile on the charges to any additional charges of falsifying a vaccine card. And maybe you're a terrorist if you do that. People are facing charges of fraudulently using the seal of the U.S. governmental department, a crime that carries 5 years in prison for each offense. Manufacturing, distributing of cards could carry a sentence to 10 years. New York Governor Kathy Hochul signed a truth in vaccination law that makes it tampering the vaccine records a felony, carrying a sentence of 1 year. Therefore, unvaccinated, newly deemed criminals will be subject to state and federal punishments. You go up to the state and federal level. So basically, it's perfectly acceptable for pharmaceutical companies to produce their own fraudulent test results to push their toxic jabs onto the public and reap enormous profits, or for public officials to scale the hell out of the people to defraud them of their wealth, livelihoods, and even their sanity by declaring a fake pandemic based on bogus PCR tests and fraudulent death certificates. But God forbid, you know, someone attempt to preserve their bodily autonomy and evade being forcefully jabbed with an experimental gene therapy drug fraudulently marketed to the public as a vaccine by using a forged document.
Yeah, you know, they're going to buy food.
It's like, how dare you lie? It's like, of all people, there's a fraud.
You're
like,
lying, for God's sake. I mean, you know, but we are. Well, I mean,
don't lie to us. That's our job.
I talked to a friend today who is from New York, and he lives out here now, but he was in communication with all of his friends back there. And he says that none of them, or very few of them, have been vaccinated. And they all go to basketball games and to football games. And I said, well, don't they have to be vaccinated to go in there? And he goes, yeah, but the key is, you know, which gate to go to, where the vaccine card is a $50 bill.
Of course that's going to happen.
So he says, he said that this is actually happening. You know, this guy would not exaggerate. He said that, you know, that you go to a certain gate and, you know, they say, show me your vaccine card, and you just have the $50 bill and then you go. So there it is. That I think is going to be pretty common, because this will be sort of, you know, they have all the snooping technology, but in general, this is just going to be a kind of hyper prohibition kind of situation, where it isn't alcohol, but it's literally, you know, biological health and biological freedom people are going to be trying to illegally possess. And I just think you're going to, you know, I think there's going to be counterfeiting at a very sophisticated level here pretty quick.
Yeah.
And then, And you have to wonder even now, you know, I mean, obviously, like the political class aren't being vaccinated. You know, I'm sure you've seen all of the videos of the fake vaccines mm-hmm. that they give these guys. But I think that even that they were probably pretty careful, even like with the NFL and the NBA, to make sure. I mean, I haven't seen how I don't know how they would do that, but I just would bet that they, you know, that they would control exactly yeah. who was going to get the lethal dose and who wouldn't, because they're the incrementalism. They don't want to have LeBron James face plant no. in the middle of the game right now, because that would, you know, create vaccine hesitancy.
I like that. Not over my dead body. Are you vaccine hesitant? Okay.
Well, there you go.
You have to shoot me first. Why are you so hesitant? Hesitant.
Yeah.
You know, but the thing is, yeah, the pandemic is just in the headlines, right? So you have, you know, like cases rocket 500% in Florida, you know, 400, you know, 600% in DC, more flight cancellations, these things. So that's existing headlines. But on the ground, it really it's petering out. And you do have, I mean, you have a lot of governors, you know, like in New York and in Oregon, saying they're going to do this, do that. But at the local level, even like in New York, you know, Governor the Hochul, who kind of slithered away into office because Cuomo was chased out of office for chasing tail, I guess you could say. But she announced, you know, these draconian measures, mask mandates, these things. But then in Suffolk County and in Nassau County, the Democrat, like local government, said, we're not going to enforce this. This is ridiculous. The sheriffs aren't enforcing this. So again, you get a lot of these statements, but at the local level, it's not being enforced. So from an epidemiological public health standpoint, these measures aren't being enforced. So it's a proven fraud, you know. But at the same time, they're pushing all the Omicron fear stuff, you know. You know, it's high, 10 times more transmissible, more miles. Okay, yeah, but,
you know. Well, one thing I was going to, first of all, just mention a data point. I got a data point of 4,000 identified Omicron victims in Germany and one fatality. Now,
yeah.
4,000 is... You know, out of, I mean, how many times if you stub your toe does it get infected and you die? It would be, so this is, you know, they're in a preposterous situation. It makes logic is just out the window here. The Omicron doesn't really have any lethality. South Africa is just completely, now is just ignoring it, which is supposedly where it comes from. And,
yeah.
you know, was going to shut the nation down. And yet they're bringing back a lot of the draconian concepts. But at the same time, I don't know if you've noticed it, but I've seen there's been kind of a bizarre kind of reversal of in a few cases, like Biden's, you know, statement that, yeah. well, the federal government can't really do anything. I mean, remember, he was the one who was talking about door-to-door federal employees.
I know. It's
like, well, what happened to that? So it's hard to know how their mind control efforts are designed. I think they have something up their sleeve. I would be, you know, I just suspect that there's, you know, Omicron will morph into something, you know, more deadly or something. And then, I do think it is going to, because I think, Tim, we're in the process of being genocided. I suspect that what's actually happening is that they're using every imaginable fear concept to just rake in the last few individuals that, you know, mm-hmm. either through financial or through psychological issues, you know, will give in to the propaganda, because they know that they're very shortly going to be, it'll start being exposed. You know, the death count will start getting up too high. At our local hospital, Ventura County Hospital, there was a second round of whistleblowing that went on, and a story came out in the local newspaper last week that, you know, nurses there are stating that there is, the hospital is just filling up with vaccine damaged individuals, and they are under strict orders not to talk about it. You know,
and this is what we worried was going to happen. I think we talked about this last year.
Yeah.
when they talked about, you know, mandating the bringing the vaccine out, is that you get the vaccine damaged. That'll be the second wave or something, the third wave, whatever you want to call it. And they'll, you know, and the obvious, of course, the obvious conclusion is that if you have people getting sicker and dying at a higher rate in the year they rolled out the vaccine and the year before when supposedly the pandemic is raging, obviously the conclusion would be the vaccine has made it worse. Right?
I mean, right. That would be a natural conclusion.
I'm not a scientist, but honestly, I thought it's supposed to make it better, but more people are dying, you know.
Yeah, the cover story will be that it is, what they need is more boosters.
Well, that's what they've talked about. I mean, you've gotten a point where it's almost like, for eons, we've lived with these things without any fear and parent, in the public. It's kind of, you coped with it year in year in cold and flu season. But now you have a situation where you'll have an executive of Pfizer or Johnson & Johnson or Merck come out and say, well, we think that vaccines now, people will need quarterly boosters. And is there a conflict of interest here? I mean, should we trust this guy? And I heard someone say it's the equivalent of the CEO of Coca-Cola bottling company saying, we now think that she mandated that people drink Coca-Cola with their breakfast every morning. And think, well, they must be concerned with our health. That's, it's like,
well, but six boosters is they're actually talking about this. We forget the country that's. I sent you that article that actually gave they actually have a schedule.
Yeah,
and it is six boosters, and this is somehow going to get you to a good place. Now, bear in mind, there is no science to indicate that anyone can even survive six boosters, that it isn't in and of itself just a lethal concoction. Given that there's hard science papers now, all of them pointing that the vaccine damages the immune system. I mean, this is really getting to be an epidemic of science papers. The idea of mandating six boosters is, it's almost just cold-blooded genocide.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
They're not even a camouflage. You know, it's just, you're going to get your cyanide tablet in the mail, and you're under orders from the state to take it. You know, that's almost where it's at. So, this is, you'd better be clear-minded. Getting back to the situation at the hospital, all of the agencies that should be accepting the whistleblower's information. That's one thing that the person told me, that's something that is a true epidemic, that, the expression came out like 20 years ago. I was listening to some, I forget, it was an autism sort of lecture. And the person was making the case that, it wasn't really correct to have the CDC and the FDA being involved in this, because there was this revolving door of personalities between pharma and these government agencies. And that's where I first heard the expression regulatory capture.
Yeah,
I think it's a huge problem. And I think it's, we're almost at the point of government capture, as I would see it.
Yeah, it's, I think the first... federal regulatory, alphabet soup agency was the Interstate Commerce Commission in the 19th century. Is there to regulate the railroads, and it rapidly became taken over by the railroads. And I think it finally went out of existence in the 1980s, but it had long since been, obviously, because the industry that is most regulated by the agency is going to have most interest in the agency. And so just over the course of time, the lobbyists and the funding and these things, they're going to be able to take over and set up a relationship with the alphabet soup agency that benefits the industry. And of course, then with the ability for pharmaceutical companies to post advertising with the media, with networks, they're going to be able to shape the type of news coverage, because when the news becomes profit motivated, I guess you could say, they can, by advertising revenue, they can control what the networks covers. They can control the media. So basically the public, right. The First Amendment, the Fourth Estate, that level of, scrutiny is cut off, is bought out. Of course, then the politicians are bought off because the pharmaceutical companies are able to give to political action committees. And that's another court decision that there was, the First Amendment applies to political countries from corporations. Problematic right there. So each stage of the game, the process has been corrupted by big money and concentrated power. And this, yeah, you're right, regulatory capture, basically, and it's also, like I said, it's worse than anarchy because now these corporations can use the apparatus of the state to pursue their narrow interests and impose their policies or their interests on the public under the cover of, public health or regulatory enforcement. They become, it's only a matter of time before these agencies become dominated by corporations that they're supposed to control. Obviously, at this point, the public interest, which isn't concentrated, isn't well organized, has become a lower priority than the industry, which can concentrate political donations, money, bribery, if you will, and get their way. And so you have, a good example would be where they offer, high paying jobs for regulators who leave the agencies. And this then is a good example. That would be Scott Gottlieb, who was a former CDC director, and Julie Gerberding, who went to work for Merck. I think Gottlieb went to work for Pfizer. And so you have this, I guess you could say, called a golden parachute. Then you have the revolving door, right, where someone works for industry, then goes work for the agency that regulates industry, then leaves it and goes back and forth. I think it was, Biden's current nominee for the FDA, Robert Califf, was, according to Wikipedia, a paid consultant for Merck, Sharp, and Dohme, Johnson & Johnson, GlaxoSmithKline, AstraZeneca, and Eli Lilly.
There's your watchdog agency.
And then you have the fact that the FDA gets a lot of its funding. I think almost half its budget comes from approving drugs, the application process. And this is part of our 60%. And the CDC, yeah. I think half of its budget is spent promoting vaccines. Right. So it's not going to be a watchdog. It's not going to be, again, it's priority. This is just assuming there's a monetary interest here, right? You can bribe people, but actually there's an ideological, and also there's these are agencies not just captured by a corporation. These corporations are owned by financial interest, banking class, transnational financial, oligarchic elite, who are using these corporations to reset the Great Reset, right? To redesign the global economy, and also to engage in genocide. They call it population control. So
you know what I think is such an important concept is it is a interim step for clear-mindedness from someone who has been believing that great conspiracies are impossible, and therefore there's no way that the whole government, someone, for example, would say 911 couldn't have been an inside job because there's just too many people. You can't keep, people quiet, and conspiracies would always get out. This kind of argument. Regulatory capture is easy to understand and is so demonstrable. People can actually understand it. So when, you have someone who takes a position that there's no way the vaccine can be harmful because it would have to be a conspiracy. There would have to be too many people involved. It would leak out. And then, because our mainstream media is such a watchdog, the information would get out. And so you couldn't pull this thing off. Well, that individual is just not ready to receive the truth, but might be able to understand the concept of regulatory capture. And so once you understand regulatory capture, I think it's and see how evil it is, and see how it is so pervasive inside our inside the agencies, Then that person might be able to take the next step at a certain point. But in any case, if you understand regulatory capture, and obviously CDC and FDA have been completely captured at this point, this might create some vaccine hesitancy. You know, you might say, well, that's a good point. Perhaps there is some motivation here that isn't pure, and I can't just believe the things that Tony Fauci is telling me. So maybe I should do a little bit of research, kind of get my own understanding of it. I mean, after all, didn't Fauci tell me that, you couldn't get COVID if you had the vaccine? And didn't he promise me that it would last, the efficacy would last long enough to create herd immunity? I mean, these things didn't happen. So maybe the herd immunity, collapse as a meme will be understandable in the concept of in the context that someone would have of regulatory capture, that Fauci is just someone who has these financial interests, corporate interests that are overriding his responsibility to defend the public. And so from that place, then more information might be able to get to the individual's mind, and perhaps they can become all the way into the sunlight.
Yeah, and another problem, of course, with regulatory capture, or at least the problem that it presents to, say, sort of putting trust in an administrative state with alphabet soup agencies that are supposed to have the public interest at heart, or that's what they're pursuing, is that these agencies can develop or grab unlimited, unbridled power, especially in a state when there's a so-called declared emergency, right? Right. Good example is the CDC. Rochelle Walensky recently issued a rule that property owners could not demand rent from their tenants during the COVID-19 pandemic. There's nothing in the charter of the CDC or in law that empowers the CDC to issue such an order, yet she did it. And another thing is, well, why is she doing this? Now, you could say it's because of the lockdown, but perhaps, just perhaps, that the CDC is being utilized by certain financial interests who want to create distressed properties in a few years, right? And how you do that? You cut off people who own property from the rental payments, while at the same time, these people still have to make their mortgage payments. So these agencies can be used for all types of reasons. So the declared emergency is a business opportunity. And you can see, someone like a George Soros or Bill Gates eyeing that, I can get some cheap farmland, I can get some cheap property in a declared emergency. And we saw that with the lockdown. You remember these agencies, the NIH, NIAID, Fauci, or the CDC, when they declared this pandemic and they use that excuse to shut down the economy, there was represented by a huge transfer of wealth from the middle class to the billionaire, multi-billionaire class. And you threw 20 million people around the world, an additional 20 million people into poverty during the lockdown in response to the so-called pandemic, but you created 400 billionaires. So there's the transfer,
There is a transfer. And if you look at the autonomous zones, which are growing, they haven't stopped growing. They've been growing ever since the pandemic was declared. Those areas are losing property value just dramatically. And as you point out, they'll be able to be purchased for a song by the individuals on the inside who know all this will be turned around. Because, you think about like Seattle. Some of the areas were 10 years ago the most valuable, or close to the most valuable kind of real estate in the city.
Yeah.
And now as the Fentanyl Brigade has come out, the homeless camps are set up, and, you have to literally move the unconscious bodies out of your, garage entrance so you can drive the Mercedes in. Those condos and the fancy buildings are just going to zero. So, it obviously creates a financial opportunity when things are going to turn around.
Yeah, you have articles and you can see kind of what they're doing. I think there was an article in Bloomberg Financial, the Bloomberg publication, how everyone should rent, not own.
Right.
And so you shouldn't own it. You know, it's 20-30, you own nothing and you're happy, right? It fits that agenda. But you know, they treat it sort of just a financial trend. No one's really orchestrating this or no one's manipulating. It's just happening. It's just this is economic reality. Right. No one's got their hand on the scale here. No one manipulating anything. It's just happening, you know.
The answer is, would the person I'm renting it from own it?
Yeah, well, it will be Berkshire Hathaway. It will be BlackRock. Yeah,
because, you look at the
Vanguard,
Vanguard and Blackstone. I mean, they are just owning so much of everything at this point.
And they're playing with house money, whereas individual buyers are, so they're putting the portion of the cost of housing up because they're paying with funny money that was given to them by the Fed. And the big example is the Federal Reserve, right? And what interest does it serve? It's not, the idea that the Federal Reserve there is to protect the currency and the value of the U.S. dollar has lost 99% of its value since the Fed was created. But they create booms and busts. And right now they're talking about tapering because of the inflation issue. And they're saying, well, the Fed's painted in a corner now because if they raise interest rates, what about the federal debt they've exploded? And they can't make the interest payments. So what are you going to do? And a lot of people believe that because the dollar is the world's reserve currency that they can engage in what they call modern monetary theory. They can inflate forever and no one will be affected or at least won't notice it. It will be fine. Well, no, because eventually when you devalue the currency, it eventually goes to zero. But the question is that the dollar isn't really an economic question. It's a political military question because those taking these decisions don't have any loyalty to the U.S. economy. The Fed has no loyalty to the U.S. economy. It's created booms and busts to manipulate the economy for decades. The original Great Depression, or the one in 1921, right after the World War I, the one in 1929, all this was orchestrated, and it resulted in greater banking concentration. So who benefits when you look at that? But right now, like I said, if they want to, right now you have the federal government running up huge amounts of debt. Is this a plan to destroy the U.S. dollar so they can usher in central banking digital currencies, which works with the vaccine passport system? Castronoff and Fitz talks about this. It's all about control. And this becomes now the currency itself is a governing system. So if you create digital currency, which is completely monitored and regulated, they can monitor everything you buy. They can control what you buy, where you can buy it. So it's a control system. And the Fed, again, acts in the interest of the Bank of International Settlements. That's who regulates it ultimately. And then you ask the question, who controls the Bank of International Settlements? And we're not allowed to know who owns actually the Federal Reserve System. They're all shareholders, but it's secret. It's state secret. Why is that?
Right.
Why? But it acts in their interest. Talk about regulatory capture. I mean, that's.
The Federal Reserve is the original regulatory capture.
Well, I guess you could say capture is the wrong word because it never was free, right? It was created. You could also make the case about the CDC and FDA.
Monetary policy at a certain point in the United States history, perhaps free is not the right word, but it was not controlled as directly as it became after the Federal Reserve took over.
Oh, yeah, because banking was decentralized. You had thousands and thousands of banks who were destroyed with the Great Depression. So they couldn't control things completely. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because deposits were local. So.
Right. So that kind of banking would be like a great step toward real democracy, because now, you look at Amazon, it's truly becoming, kind of a one world government. You buy food at Whole Foods, you order books. And of course, so many things online now are coming through Amazon.
And if you misbehave, you lose your Prime account.
And this is exactly right, is that then you have the social credit system is directly in back of all this, from which they can control every single thing you do. So as far as rebellion, you can see these are points of kind of civilization that we really want to fight for and not lose the ability to have, undetectable transactions between ourselves. And you can see why gold and silver are, something that the New World Order is not pleased with, because, they are wealth itself, whereas the electronic currency, digital currency, are obviously things that the government just can control with a computer.
It's harder to manipulate gold and silver. Obviously, a lot of people say if you advocate gold and silver, you're not you look at it as sort of a panacea and a guarantee. Well, it's not a guarantee because you can't, obviously it's not a foolproof because look what they did with it, but they got rid of it for a reason. And I think the trade with currency is to get further away from anything that's real. So you can engage in alchemy. Actually engaged in alchemy. What was alchemy? You turn base metal into gold, or, you know, and that was a fraud. And look what they've done with finance. That's why George Soros's book calls it the alchemy of finance. But
Well, I mean, we have discussed before that the dollar system, the dollar, is just a psychological unit. So as long as the psychology of the people who are using it can be controlled, the actual value of the dollar is basically, you know, ethereal. It's not something that is real. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter how many they create. All that matters is the control over the individuals
Yeah, because a true source of value is human labor, right? That's what it comes down to, is people working, their labor, their ingenuity, their creativity. That's, you know, what creates real wealth. Money is there to facilitate transactions. You can manipulate, if you can manipulate the currency, you can literally steal people's, you know, labor from under, you know, while they're sleeping. And that's why they've gotten away from precious metals. There are some problems with precious metals. That's sort of an administrative managerial issue about how much money should be created and all that. It should reflect productivity. I mean, theoretically, you can have a fiat dollar system or a paper money system that works if the people running it are ethical. That's the biggest question, isn't it?
Well, of course. I mean it's not
moral. It's a moral issue.
The idea of the fiat currency being evil is incorrect. It's not. It is the people who are controlling the system that are evil. That's all. And that's why the idea of communism or capitalism, these are just, you know, concepts that have been given to people to facilitate, a dialectic for the purpose of control, because you want to root for one side or the other. But all that really matters in this regard is who controls the production of credit, because credit is infinite, right? It's just a concept. And I mean, whereas the dollar at least can be a real thing, credit, I mean, it's just inside the computers, buddy. It's not real. It's just so. And if you can control it like they do, then there is no cost to the production of credit. It's just a computer operation. And so if the tribe sells credit to one another, as the Federal Reserve at the discount window sells to the seven large banks, if it sells credit at, you know, 0.25%, and then they are legally able to resell that credit for 0.5% or 1%, well, that is an open door to own the world.
Yes,
right?
They can
at this point,
they call
with it the arbitrage. They can literally buy every single business in existence that makes money and simply pay themselves back the reduced rate out of the profits of the business. Mm-hmm. And no one can compete against them. This is like the monopoly that Rockefeller, you know, enjoyed, where Harriman and the Rothschilds were giving him a discounted a price of delivery using the railroad systems so that the competition had no chance, right?
Yeah.
They created the monopoly. Well, here, this is exactly the same thing, except the monopoly is the entire universe.
Yeah, and very much like the internet, the railroad was largely built by the taxpayer, and they manipulate that to dominate. Now the internet was largely built by the taxpayers, and they commandeer that and use it to privatize, you know, they more or less socialize their costs and privatize their profits, you know.
Yeah, and these things, we've gone over them, but they're useful to have an awareness of, I think, as we move forward in this year, even like, you know, we're really going to have to be on our game, Tim, going forward, because, I mean, it's going to hit the fan here pretty quick. I think actually the United States, it might, they this winter might even pass by without, civil war. But I just can't imagine in some of these, like Germany and Austria and in England, where they've got another lockdown coming, because the rebellion against the lockdowns has been too ferocious and too well organized. And the government has responded, rather than giving, saner policies, with more force. Yeah. So this is a recipe for, you know, like what's going on in Austria. I mean, the public will either have to completely capitulate and become a slave state, just
reaching a point of absurdity. Like you cited that 1 in 4,000.
Yeah, 1 in 4,000.
1 in 4,000, 0.25, I guess, if you do the math real fast.
Yes, good math. Yeah,
that made me think of, there's an article here by Heather McDonald. She wrote for The Spectator. It's just on December 20th, it's titled Inside the Omicron Fear Factory. Subtitle: Public Health Chiefs and the Media Are Working to Overtime.
I love the title. Yeah,
gin up hysteria. This is what she points out. The New York Post cross-published it under a different headline. It was "How the Elite Keep Us Scared." Nevertheless, here's a brief example. Heather quotes a so-called public health expert at Georgetown University, who was dismissing the Omicron variant's lack of severity. The expert said, even if the infection is mild in many individuals, it's not going to be mild in everyone. Then McDonald writes, but that 100% mildness standard is unrealistic. There are outliers in any disease and any treatment.
Yeah.
The question is, what is the predominant reality? The zero risk, zero harm standard for public policy adopted for the first time with COVID has been a proven social, economic, and public health disaster. See, it makes someone might think that's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous standard, and it's on its face ridiculous. And the fact that a public health expert, would actually say that, he's stupid or he's malevolent. I mean,
that's the thing, is that the public has to automatically, when you hear a non sequitur like that, you can't take the assumption this is a really dumb person. You have to go immediately to the idea of this is a malevolent propagandist trying to manipulate me, you know, through the language to stupefy me so that I don't become upset over government policies which have a veneer of, medical concern for the public and are actually the iron fist of dictatorship, you know, descending.
Well, their intention is a social, economic, and public health disaster. That's their objective, because that's how they get to the Great Reset. That's how they meet their objectives. That's how they get population reduction. That's how they destroy the currency. That's how they reorder the economy that they openly talked about. So excuse me for thinking that there's another agenda foot when they advertise their agenda, you know, to everybody. Then say, you know, talk about gaslighting. It's like,
yeah.
So anyway. Okay, Joe, I think we covered it.
Oh, we have, Tim. And so I will talk to you soon.